Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Scripps 5 Must Know Things, this time for the business week ended 19th April 2024. This is Ian Haydock. In this week's episode, Teva's immunology biosimilar launches, Intracellular's promising depression data, Phase 3 sleep apnea win for Lilly's tirzepatide, an interview with Viking's CEO, and China looks to define innovative drugs. Teva Pharmaceutical Industries is optimistic about two big upcoming biosimilar launches in the US in the immunology space, despite market dynamics that have prevented substantial biosimilar uptake. The company is preparing to launch Simlandi, a biosimilar version of AbbVie's Humira, within weeks, and Selarsdi, a biosimilar version of Johnson & Johnson's Stelara, next year. Teva's partner, Alvotech, developed the biosimilars, with Simlandi receiving US FDA approval in February for all of Humira's indications, including rheumatoid arthritis, plaque psoriasis, and ulcerative colitis, Jessica Merrill writes. The FDA approved Selarsdi for Stelara's dermatology indications, plaque psoriasis, and psoriatic arthritis on 16th April. Both launches represent enormous commercial opportunities, but the US market for immunology biosimilars has failed to materialize the way it has in Europe or in other therapeutic areas like oncology, and Teva is late to the market with Simlandi, which is the 10th biosimilar for Humira to win FDA approval. Nonetheless, Senior Vice President of US Market Access, Tom Rainey, said Teva is confident it is entering the adalimumab market at the right time, now that payers have had more than a year of experience with biosimilars and that lessons learned with adalimumab will translate to Stelara. I believe that the biosimilar market is kind of evolving right as we speak, Rainey said. We are coming right in at the wave of the opportunity when things are changing. Despite the availability of multiple biosimilar versions of Humira starting in January 2023, biosimilar utilization has been unusually low as AbbVie has successfully defended its brand by lowering the price and tying rebates to other key products. A report that biosimilar developer Samsung Bioepis published recently said biosimilars together captured just 2% of the adalimumab market as of the end of 2023. But Rainey said AbbVie's dominance in the market is beginning to falter. If you start to look at the weeklies of the biosimilars, you're starting to see changes, and a lot of my discussions with the payers have also been about where they're going to be starting to take action against Humira, he said. The first ustekinumab biosimilars are expected to launch in early 2025. Selarsdi is the second biosimilar version of Stelara to be approved and can launch on or after 21st February under a settlement agreement. Teva said it expects to have all of the indications at launch of its biosimilar. Intracellular Therapies reported positive results on 16th April from the first Phase 3 clinical trial of Caplyta in major depressive disorder that exceeded expectations for the study and increased speculation that the results would add to the drug's blockbuster potential. Assuming a second Phase 3 trial in MDD is positive when it reads out late in the second quarter of 2024, the company plans to file for supplemental approval in the third indication later this year, Mandy Daxon writes. The US FDA approved the atypical antipsychotic Caplyta for adults with schizophrenia in December 2019 and for adults with depressive episodes associated with bipolar 1 or 2 disorder in December 2021. Jefferies analyst Andrew Tsai forecast peak Caplyta sales of $2 billion in schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and $1 to $2 billion in MDD in a 16th April note following the first Phase 3 depression study readout. Analysts predicted on the back of strong results from the first study that the second Phase 3 trial is also likely to be positive and supportive of a supplemental NDA filing before the end of 2024 without waiting for the results of a third Phase 3 trial in line with prior and current company guidance. Intracellular's CEO, Sharon Mates, said during a same-day conference call with analysts and investors to review the Phase 3 data in MDD that we think our package so far is incredibly strong, so we are very optimistic here going forward of having our filing later this year. The phase 3 study 501 evaluated 42 milligrams once daily as an adjunct to antidepressant therapy, largely SSRIs and SNRIs, versus placebo plus antidepressant therapy in 485 patients with inadequate response to antidepressant therapy alone. The company reported the study 501 results in the modified intention to treat population and on the primary endpoint of change from baseline at week 6 on the MADRS total score versus placebo. The least squares mean reduction from baseline was 14.7 points versus 9.8 points for placebo, or a 4.9 point placebo adjusted difference in MADRS scores. This is among the largest effect sizes ever seen among competitor trials and bodes well for Study 502 given its exact same study design, Evercore ISI analyst Michael DeFiore said in a 15th April note. Fresh off its approval in the fourth quarter of 2023 for the treatment of obese and overweight adults, Eli Lilly's Zepbound looks likely to win approval in a related disease area, moderate to severe obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA, in adults with obesity, thanks to positive top-line phase 3 results. The US company reported on 17th April results from two SURMOUNT-OSA trials showing that tirzepatide, administered at 10 or 15 milligrams, significantly reduced the apnea-hypopnea index compared with placebo, the primary endpoint for the two studies, which respectively tested the drug in patients not on continuous positive airway pressure therapy and patients who were on CPAP therapy. The company plans to file for US FDA approval and with other regulatory agencies starting in mid-2024, Alaric Diarmond writes. Tirzepatide, a GLP-1-GIP agonist that Lilly already markets for obesity under the brand name Zepbound, and for type 2 diabetes as Mounjaro, won FDA approval in November 2023 for obesity, a potentially lucrative market in which analysts have forecast peak sales for the drug of up to $40 billion and in which it would compete against Novo Nordisk's Wegovy. Lilly Research Laboratories President Dan Skovronsky told Scrip earlier this year that it's very challenging to improve upon it as an obesity treatment. Still, the drug maker remains on the outlook for additional opportunities for treating overweight and obese individuals, including drugs from other companies, and it has next-generation candidates retatrutide and orforglipron in phase 3 development, with data expected in 2025. In the SURMOUNT OSA Study 1, among patients not on CPAP, efficacy estimand results showed a 27.4 point reduction in AHI in the tirzepatide group and 4.8 point reduction in the placebo group. In Study 2, among patients who were on CPAP, efficacy estimand results showed a 30.4 point reduction in AHI for the tirzepatide group versus a 6 point reduction for placebo, while percent reductions were 62.8% and 6.4% respectively at 52 weeks. Based on the data we have seen today, we think tirzepatide has the potential to be the first pharmaceutical treatment for the underlying disease, Cantor Fitzgerald analyst Louise Chen said in a 17th April note. Viking Therapeutics sits in a unique but enviable position compared to other clinical stage companies, as it has two candidates in phase 2 development that are demonstrating strong therapeutic profiles in a pair of lucrative indications, obesity and metabolic-associated steatohepatitis, or MASH. Seen for years as a potential competitor to Madrigal Pharmaceuticals and others in MASH, the San Diego biopharma now is viewed as a potential threat to obesity leaders like Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, following impressive data readouts for both injectable and oral formulations of its VK2735 in obesity, Joseph Haas writes. Meanwhile, VK2809, a THR beta agonist, is in the same drug class as Madrigal's just-launched Rezdiffra, the first approved MASH therapy, but has demonstrated efficacy and safety advantages in mid-stage trials to date. The subcutaneous formulation of VK2735, a dual GLP-1-GIP agonist, demonstrated 14.7% weight loss at 13 weeks in phase 2 data, reported in February, which analysts described as competitive with currently marketed obesity drugs, as well as other obesity candidates currently in development. Those competitors include Lilly's Zepbound, also a GLP-1 GIP agonist, as well as Novo Nordisk's GLP-1 agonist, Wegovy. Viking grossed $550 million in a follow-on public offering on 28 February and on 26 March revealed that an oral formulation of VK2735 had demonstrated 5.3% weight loss after 4 weeks in a Phase 1b study, showing a much cleaner gastrointestinal safety and tolerability profile than tirzepatide or semaglutide. The company intends to take oral 2735 into Phase 2 this year, while the subcutaneous formulation is already in Phase 2. Meanwhile, Viking expects to report Phase 2b data for VK2809 this quarter, after which it will face decisions on how to proceed with a likely Phase 3 program. Scrip interviewed Viking CEO Brian Lian, who provided significant details on his company's current thinking and potential strategic directions. On how Viking expects obesity therapy to change in the next few years, for example, he said, "We like the incretin access, the GLP-1 and GIP access, because they are proven to show efficacy, they have a pretty good safety profile, and the tolerability is really manageable. But we are aware that other people are looking at other mechanisms, and this market is large enough that you can have multiple entrants, I think, with the same mechanism and multiple different mechanisms all thriving." See the interview in full for the full details of the Q&A with Brian Lian. Finally, Dexter Yan writes that China's public payer, the National Basic Medical Insurance Fund, is putting forward its own definition for innovative drugs in a bid to raise the bar higher than what the industry is currently complying with. While signs of the bold move by the country's single biggest payer first appeared in the form of an industry-friendly policy proposal in early February, its shot at defining innovation in drug development along with price restrictions was recently revealed by Xian Zhongzhong, who's former head of the Department of Drug and Services Administration under the National Healthcare Security Administration. In the view of the public payer, an innovative small molecule drug needs to possess different therapeutic mechanism and chemical structure and bring specific and novel benefits to patients. Zhong, who had steered the annual price talks for updates to the National Reimbursement Drug List before his retirement from NHSA in 2021, said in a speech on 9 April during the China Pharmaceutical Innovation Ecosystems Conference, or CPIE, in Shanghai. If finally adopted by the NHSA, the novel definition would impose much stricter requirements on such drugs than by current industry standards. Currently, an innovative chemical drug is defined as one that contains novel compounds with specific structure and pharmacological effects and possesses clinical value, according to the National Medical Products Administration. The fresh stance of the public payer apparently has unnerved the pharmaceutical industry. The NMPA's criteria on innovative drugs are already in place and applied, Jiang Wan, who's senior vice president of Better Pharmaceuticals, commented at the same event. For the drugs that could meet the criteria advocated by the public payer, their prices would have to be set under certain upper limits if drug makers seek the payer's reimbursement coverage for such drugs in China, Jiang noted in his speech at the CPIE event. According to the public payer's purchase requirements for innovative drugs, the annual treatment with these drugs needs to cost less than 1.5 to 2 times China's annual GDP per capita, said Zhong. An exception would be given to such innovative drugs for rare diseases, with the prices to be capped at 4 times annual GDP per capita. In 2023, China's annual GDP per capita amounted to around $12,700 at the average exchange rate for last year, according to statistics from China's National Bureau of Statistics. That's all for now. Many thanks for listening. The link in the description takes you to all the stories discussed in this episode, so log in to gain full access if you're a subscriber, or sign up for a free trial to see what you're missing. Bye for now.